It's not God's will that anyone should commit suicide. Glad to hear it, I said. She gave me a look of such pity I had to turn my face away. You're like how I was, she said, after Becky died. It's a funny thing. We were all so close to Becky, Megan and Sammy and I, but we hardly talked about her after she died. That's when we started going our separate ways, like Becky, and even her illness was the glue that held us together. What about her? I asked. I wondered if Megan dreamed about Becky like I do, 3 or 4 times a week lately. I was so angry, Megan said. Angry at God. How could he let someone like Becky die? With so many awful people in the world, why was it Becky had to be the one to die? I actually hated God. I hated everyone and everything, and I even hated God. I tried to remember what Megan had been like. It was a little over a year ago, so it shouldn't have been too hard. But that whole time was so awful. Becky had been sick for so long, and then it looked like the treatments were working, and then out of nowhere she died anyway. Mom was scared for me, Megan said. And Reverend Marshall had just started preaching here, so she took me to see him. I screamed at him. How could God do that to Becky? How could he do that to me? I thought Reverend Marshall would tell me to go home and I'd understand when I was older, but he didn't. He said we could never truly understand God's will. We have to trust God, have faith in him, and follow the rules he gave us without ever understanding him. The Lord is my shepherd, Miranda. Once Reverend Marshall made me understand that, all my doubts and all my anger went away. God has his own reasons for what we're suffering. Maybe when we're in heaven we'll understand. But until then, all we can do is pray for his forgiveness and obey his will. But his will can't be for you to starve to death, I said. Why not? She asked. His will was for Becky to die. Death can be a blessing, Miranda. Think how much suffering Becky's been spared. But you can't pray to die, I said. I pray to accept God's will without any doubts, she replied. I pray to be worthy of his love. I pray for eternal life in heaven. I pray for you, Miranda, and Mom and Dad, and even for Dad's other family. And I pray, as Reverend Marshall says we should, for the souls of all the poor sinners, that they should see the light and be spared the eternal flames of hell. Thank you, I said, for lack of anything better to say. Megan stared at me with pity. I know you're not a believer, she said. And I see the unhappiness in your eyes. Can you say you're happy, Miranda? Can you say you're at peace with the world? No, of course not, I said. But I don't think I should be. Why should I be happy when there isn't enough food and people are getting sick and I can't even turn on the air conditioning? Megan laughed. All of that is so unimportant, she said. This life is no more than the blink of an eye compared to life everlasting. Pray with me, Miranda. The only thing that's keeping me from true happiness is knowing that people I love aren't saved. Well, no one says you can be happy about everything, I said. I know I should be glad for you, Megan, but frankly, I think you're crazy. And if Reverend Marshall is making you this way, I think he's evil. This life, this everyday existence is the one gift we're given. To throw it away, to want to be dead, to me, that's the sin. The Megan who used to be my best friend would have argued with me, and then we would have laughed. This Megan got down on her knees and began to pray. When I got home, I went back into the woods and got 3 more bags of kindling. Maybe I'll end up in the eternal flames of hell, like Megan says. But until that happens, I intend to stay warm from the flames of a wood stove. July 3rd. After supper tonight, Mom said, I was thinking about this on the drive home yesterday. How would you feel if we cut back to 2 meals a day? I think even Matt was startled, because he didn't say sure right away. Which 2? I asked, like it would matter. We'd definitely keep eating supper, Mom said. It's important for us to have 1 meal together. But we could decide every day if we wanted breakfast or lunch. I know I'd skip breakfast. I've never been much of a breakfast person. I skip lunch sometimes at school, Matt said. It wouldn't be that big a deal for me to skip it. Of course it's voluntary, Mom said. We're nowhere near running out of food. But I thought while Johnny is away, maybe we could all do with a little less. I pictured Johnny on the farm, eating eggs and drinking milk, and for a second, I really hated him. It's fine, Mom, I said. I'll skip a meal. I'll live. I wonder what it's going to be like with Dad and Lisa. I'm starting to develop real fantasies about Springfield. I picture a kitchen full of food, a working refrigerator, farmers markets with fresh produce, and eggs, and pies and cookies and chocolate fudge. I imagine air conditioning and TV and internet and 80-degree weather and indoor pools and no mosquitoes. I'll settle for any one of those things. Well, any one of those things and fudge. July 4th. Happy Independence Day. Ha! Horton kept us up all night wailing in front of Johnny's bedroom door. He's gotten very sulky and only ate half of his food yesterday, and Mom didn't even have to ask him to. No electricity for the past 3 days. The temperature has been hovering around 100 degrees, and it doesn't get much cooler at night. I dreamed heaven was an ice palace, cold and white and beckoning. I skipped breakfast today, and I was hungry when I went swimming. I'll try skipping lunch tomorrow. All the time I spent with Dan, not enough, and Emily was there practically on top of us the entire time. All I could think about was food. How much I missed breakfast. What I was going to eat for lunch. How many more loaves of bread we were going to be able to bake before we ran out of yeast. I think about Johnny getting 3 meals a day. Real food. Farm food. And how Mom pulled this 2-meal business on us only after he left. And I get so angry. It's like she thinks Johnny's needs come first. Got to get him his nourishment if he's going to reach 6 feet. Just to be on the safe side, give him some of Miranda's. I hope this bad mood is just because it's the 4th. That was always one of my favorite holidays. I love the parades and the fair and the fireworks. This year, Matt brought Mrs. Nesbitt over for supper, and after we ate, we sat on the front porch and sang patriotic songs. Horton screeched right along, and it was hard to say which one of us sounded worse. This is, without a doubt, the worst summer of my life, and there are still 2 months to go. July 6th. No electricity for the past 5 days. None of us wants to say it, but we're all thinking maybe we'll never have electricity again. It was 97 this afternoon. Mom is making us drink lots and lots of water. Matt's still chopping down trees, and I'm still gathering kindling. It's hard to imagine ever being cold again. I think brunch is going to work best for me. I go swimming in the morning, and then when I come back, I eat my meal. That way, I don't have to watch Matt eat breakfast or watch Mom eat her half lunch, and feel guilty when I'm eating more than she is. July 7th. Right after I got back from swimming, the electricity came on. We haven't had any in almost a week, and we were jubilant at its return. Mom always leaves a load of most needed to be washed clothes in the washing machine, and she turned it on right away. I grabbed the vacuum cleaner and started on the living room floor. Mom got the dishwasher going and the central air. It was 92 degrees when I woke up this morning. Matt turned on the rabbit ears TV, but all he got was an emergency broadcasting signal, whatever that means. After 10 glorious minutes, the electricity went off. Everything stopped. The vacuum and the air conditioning and the washer and the dishwasher and the freezer that would have made us ice cubes for the first time in a week. We stood around, actually stood around, waiting for the appliances to turn themselves back on. Mom stared at the washer. I held on to the vacuum. After about 15 minutes, I gave up and put the vacuum cleaner away. Mom unloaded the dishes from the dishwasher, rinsed them off, and put them away. She held off on the laundry until mid-afternoon. Then she and I unloaded it, carried the soapy wet clothes to the bathtub, and spent what felt like hours rinsing them out and wringing them so they could get hung on the clothesline. So help me, 15 minutes after we got them hung, there was a thunderstorm. I thought Mom was going to start crying. I sure felt like it, but she was okay until Matt finally made his way back in. He spends all his time chopping wood, and I guess he wasn't going to let a little thunder and lightning get in his way. Mom totally blew it. She screamed at him for staying in the woods during a thunderstorm. Her face turned so red, I was afraid she'd have a stroke. Matt yelled right back. He knew what he was doing. Every minute counted. If he'd been in any danger, he would have come right in. Then, the electricity came back on. We all ran out, took the clothes off the line, and shoved them into the dryer. Mom started a second load in the washing machine. We turned on the air conditioning, and Matt went online to see if anything was there. Just a week-old listing of the dead and the missing. This time, the electricity stayed on for 40 minutes, long enough for the second load of laundry. It had stopped raining, so Mom hung it on the line. The ice cubes weren't frozen all the way through, but they still were a wonderful luxury in our glasses of water. The house cooled down, and outside it was less muggy. Mom and Matt are still speaking to each other. Horton is still demanding to know where we hid Johnny. I can't decide which is worse, no electricity or unreliable electricity. I wonder if I'll ever have to decide which is worse, life as we're living or no life at all. July 9th. The temperature is 102. There's been no electricity since Saturday, and I have my period. I would kill for a chocolate chip ice cream cone. July 10th. Here's the funny thing about the world coming to an end. Once it gets going, it doesn't seem to stop. I woke up this morning and immediately sensed that things were different. It's hard to explain. It was cooler than it has been, which is good, but the sky was this weird gray color, not exactly like it was cloudy or even foggy, more like someone had pulled a translucent gray shade over the blue sky. I went downstairs to the kitchen because I could hear Mom and Matt talking. Mom had boiled water for tea, and even though I don't much like tea, it still gives me the illusion of having something in my stomach, so I made myself a cup. "What's going on?" I asked, because it was pretty obvious something was. "We hadn't wanted to worry you," Mom began. I don't know what raced through my mind first. Johnny, Dad, Lisa's baby, Mrs. Nesbitt, Grandma, electricity, food, mosquitoes, the moon crashing into Earth. Everything flooded in. I know how terrified I must have looked, but Mom didn't change her expression. No reassuring smile, no laugh at my overreaction. Matt looked every bit as grim. I steeled myself for the worst. "We thought this was a possibility," Mom said. "Matt, Peter, and I. But the scientists didn't say anything about it, at least not that we heard on the radio. I guess we hoped we were exaggerating, worrying about things that weren't really going to happen." "Mom, what happened?" I asked. At least it didn't seem to be anything personal. The radio wouldn't care what happened to Johnny or Dad. "You know the moon is closer to the Earth than it used to be," Matt said. "And that's changed the gravitational pull." "Of course," I said. "That's why the tides changed, and that's what caused all the earthquakes." "What we were concerned about, what seems to be happening now, is volcanoes," Mom said. "Volcanoes," I said. "There aren't any volcanoes in Pennsylvania." Mom managed half a smile. "Not that we know of," she said. "We're not in any direct danger from volcanoes, any more than we've been in direct danger from the tsunamis or the earthquakes." "Of course, there's been plenty of indirect danger. In case I needed any more reminding, a mosquito landed on my left arm. I killed it before it killed me." "Okay," I said. "So how can volcanoes make things any worse?" I was hoping Matt would laugh or Mom would tell me not to be so self-pitying. But instead, they both looked grim. "What is it?" I asked. "Things can't get worse. What can a volcano do that hasn't already happened?" "A lot," Matt said, almost angrily. I don't know if he was angry at me or at the world. "The moon's gravitational pull is forcing magma through the volcanoes. From what we heard on the radio last night and this morning, there are dormant volcanoes erupting everywhere. It's been going on for a few days now, and there's no guarantee it's ever going to stop. The earthquakes haven't. The floods haven't. The eruptions may not either." "We don't know what's going to happen," Mom said. "But right now, there's more volcanic action than there ever has been." "I still don't get how that's going to affect us," I said. "You said there are no volcanoes here. Have lots of people died?" "Lots," Matt said. "And lots more are going to. And not just people who live near volcanoes either." "Matt," Mom said. And she put her hand on his arm. I think that scared me most of all. Matt's done nothing but comfort me since he got home, and now he needed Mom to comfort him. Look outside, Matt said. Just look at that sky. So I did. It was that funny shade of gray. When a large enough volcano erupts, it clouds the sky, Matt said. Not just a mile away, and not just 100 miles away. Thousands of miles away. And not just for a day or two, either. The concern is that the volcanic ash will cover the sun most places on Earth, Mom said, like it seems to be doing already here. And if it lasts long enough...
Crops, Matt said. No sunlight, no crops. Nothing grows without sunlight.
Oh, Mom, I said. Not the vegetable garden. How can that be? We're nowhere near a volcano. I'm sure we'll get the sun back.
They're starting to issue warnings, Mom said. The scientists on the radio. They say we should be prepared for major climatic changes. Drought's a real possibility, and record cold temperatures. It's already cooling off here. It was 88 when I went to bed last night, and it's 72 now. But feel how muggy it is. It hasn't cooled off because of a thunderstorm. It's cooled off because the sunlight can't penetrate the ash in the sky. But it can't last all that long, I said. A week? A month? Is there something we can do to keep the garden growing? Mom took a deep breath. I think we have to assume it's going to last longer than that, she said. And we should prepare for the worst. Very little sunlight, very weak sunlight for several months. A year, maybe longer.
Longer? I asked, and I could hear the hysteria in my voice. Longer than a year? Why? Where's the nearest volcano? What the hell is going on?
There's a volcano at Yellowstone, she said. It erupted yesterday. Phoenix and Las Vegas are drowning in ash.
Las Vegas? I said. Is Grandma okay?
There's no way of knowing, Matt said. I pictured Springfield, my Springfield, with its food and its electricity.
Are things better east of us? I asked.
Miranda, this isn't a local problem, Mom said. It's not just one volcano. A half dozen erupted yesterday alone. Nothing like this has ever happened before. Wind currents will affect things, and no one can predict the wind.
Maybe we'll be lucky. Maybe something good will happen that we can't imagine just now.
But we have to prepare for the worst. You and I and Matt and Johnny have to prepare for the worst. We have to assume frosts in August. We have to assume no power and no food coming in, and no gas for the car and no oil for the furnace. Up till now, we've been play-acting survival. But from now on, we have to take it seriously.
Play-acting? I cried. You think this has all been a game to me?
Look, Matt said, and I couldn't tell which one of us he was trying to calm down. The smartest thing we can do is assume things are going to get a lot worse. Mom and I were talking about precautions we can take now, so that if it's a rough winter, we'll be in better shape. Like eating less, I said, because we can't be sure of the garden. Matt nodded. I'm not crazy about the idea either, he said. But we do have to discuss the possibility.
I can cut down to one meal a day, Mom said. I'm too upset to be hungry these days anyway. But I don't want you kids doing that. Not unless we really have to.
Maybe we could fast one day a week, I suggested. Or I could skip brunch, say, every other day.
Those both sound like good ideas, Matt said. I could eat breakfast Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, and Miranda could eat brunch Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays, and we could both fast on Sundays. But Mom, if you're eating only one meal a day, you really shouldn't fast.
Mom looked like she was going to cry.
I'll be fine, she said instead.
I think we need to store up as much water as we possibly can. As long as we have running water, we might as well use it, but we need to conserve as much as possible.
The well might run dry? I asked.
It's a possibility, Matt said. Any water we don't use now could come in handy 6 months from now.
I'm also concerned whatever rain we get will be polluted, Mom said. We should boil our drinking water from now on. We've never had any problems with our well water, but if the air is badly polluted, we shouldn't take chances.
What about the pond? I asked.
I can keep swimming, can't I?
I think so, Mom said. For the time being. Of course, if the temperature really plummets, it might get too cold.
It's July, I said. How cold can it get?
That's what we don't know, Matt said. But I guess we're going to find out.
Just to prove everybody wrong, Mom and Matt and all the scientists, I went swimming this morning. Only two other people showed up, and none of us stayed very long. Even though I knew the water was just as clean as it had been yesterday, I still felt dirty when I got out of the pond. It wasn't cold outside, but it was so clammy that I couldn't stop shivering. Just yesterday I'd been wishing things would cool off, and now that they have, I miss heat so much. I even miss seeing the moon. Today's a Saturday, so I ate brunch. Tomorrow we'll fast. I wonder how that will be, but I guess we'll get used to it. I hope Grandma's okay. I guess the lists of the dead are about to get a lot longer. Chapter 8. July 11th. Mom changed the rules so I can eat brunch on Mondays. She says it isn't fair for me to fast on Sundays and then not eat until Monday night. Of course, she isn't eating until Monday night, but we're not supposed to notice. Fasting wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. I got real hungry around lunchtime, but it wore off as the day went along. I guess I'll get used to it. It's hard to be sure, but I think things are getting grayer. Peter dropped by this afternoon. We told him our plans and he thought they were good ones. He especially approved of boiling the drinking water. I asked him about swimming. "It's probably better if you stopped," he said. "The people with town water are telling me it's discolored, and there are concerns about how much longer it's going to last. All that takes electricity, and we know how well the power plants are working these days." "But what does that have to do with the pond?" I asked. "It's hard to predict what people will do if they don't have running water," Peter said. "They might start taking their dirty clothes to the pond to wash them there, or they might start bathing there. There's a possibility the pond will become a breeding ground. Nowadays, it's better to be safe than sorry." At least he didn't list the symptoms of cholera. That, for Peter, showed real restraint. "I think I'll go swimming tomorrow anyway. Maybe Dan will show up. Maybe the sun will shine." July 12th. No Dan. No sun, no electricity, no word from Johnny or Dad. July 13th. Matt stopped running. It took me 5 days to realize that. I finally asked, and he said he'd stopped on Saturday, partly because he's worried about air quality and partly to conserve strength. The days seem a lot shorter than just a week ago. At least it's getting darker sooner. Mom lets us use one of the oil lamps in the sunroom every evening. It doesn't cast enough light for all of us to read, so Matt and I take turns sitting near it. Mom found a bag of old yarn in the attic, and she's crocheting at night, so she doesn't need much light. I'm using the flashlight to write this now. I know I should stop. Batteries don't last forever. July 14th. I did something so stupid today. I could kill myself. I'm so angry and upset. We were sitting around this evening doing our let's share the dim light routine, and around 9, Mom announced we'd used up enough oil for one night and we should go to bed. We've been on a sunrise to sunset pattern for a while now, but with that horrible gray covering over the sun, our timing is off. You can still tell if the sun is up, but there are no dramatic changes. Gray at 6 a.m., gray at 6 p.m. And I don't know why, but I just didn't feel like going to bed. Maybe it's the nightmares I've been having the past couple of days. Becky pushing me into a volcano, stuff like that. I said I was going to sit on the porch before going to bed, and since sitting on the porch doesn't use up any energy, Mom had no reason to say no. So I went out onto the porch and sat there for a while, maybe half an hour. Certainly long enough that when I went back in, Mom and Matt were already in their rooms. Only when I decided to go in, I forgot about Horton. Horton goes outside in the daytime, but we're not allowed to let him out any time after sunset. Even when we had electricity, that was the rule. Horton stays in at night. I guess Horton's as confused about what's day and what's night as the rest of us. He raced out as soon as I opened the door. I went back out and called for him, but he wasn't interested. I stayed on the porch for an extra hour calling for him and hoping he'd come back on his own, but there's no sign of him. I'd better not use up any more flashlight battery. I just hope he's on the doorstep, complaining about being forced to spend the night outside when I get up tomorrow. July 15th. No Horton. I alternated between gathering kindling and looking for him.
Mom and Matt searched also, but none of us saw him. Mom says I shouldn't feel bad, that it could have happened with any of us. But I know it's my fault. I am so careless. I've always gotten into trouble because I'm careless, but most of the time I've only hurt myself. I don't know what Johnny will do if he gets home and Horton isn't back. July 16th. Still no sign of Horton. Mom and I had a big fight. We haven't heard a word from Johnny in 2 weeks, and all you can think of is that damned cat. Johnny's fine, I yelled right back at her. Johnny's eating 3 meals a day. You waited until he left before you put us on our starvation diets. You think I didn't notice that? You think I don't know which one of us you're betting on? I still don't believe I said that. The thoughts crossed my mind, but I haven't even written it here, it's so horrible. What if Mom truly believes only one of us is likely to make it? I know she wouldn't choose herself. But would she really pick between Matt and Johnny and me? Will a point come where she asks two of us to give our food to the third? The thing is, I know if it comes to that, Matt wouldn't take the food. And Mom's got to know that also. And when I do think about this, and I try so hard not to, I think Mom guesses I couldn't make it on my own. That no female could. Which leaves Johnny. I hate thinking like this. I hate myself for being so upset about Horton that I took it out on Mom. I hate being so selfish that it never even occurred to me Mom was worried about not hearing from Johnny. I've stopped worrying about not hearing from Dad. I just imagine a month away from here, from Mom. A month in Springfield, where for some reason the sun shines brightly and the electricity works all the time and I'm never hungry. July 17th. 3 days, and none of us have caught a glimpse of Horton. Even Mrs. Nesbitt's been looking since Horton sometimes wanders down to her house. She thought maybe she saw him yesterday, but she isn't sure, and Matt says we shouldn't assume she really did. People see what they want to see, he said. Mom and I haven't talked since our horrible fight yesterday, which makes supper time even more fun. After supper, I go searching for Horton until it's too dark to see anything, let alone a gray tabby. Then I sit on the porch and will him to come home. Matt came out on the porch. Horton might show up tonight, he said, but we'd better start dealing with the possibility he isn't coming back. I think he's going to, I said. I think he just went searching for Johnny. When he gets hungry enough, he'll come back. It isn't like anyone else is going to feed him. Even in the gloomy darkness, I could see Matt's expression. I've gotten to know it so well lately. It's that, how am I going to tell her this one, look. You know we're in pretty good shape, he said. Compared to a lot of other people, we're doing fine. That's how he does it. He kind of slides into it, breaks it to me gently, points out how fabulous our life is before he sticks the knife in. Just say it, I demanded. It's possible Horton's been killed, Matt said. For food. I thought I was going to be sick. I don't know why that hadn't occurred to me. Maybe because until a couple of months ago, I didn't live in a world where pets were regarded as food. Look, Matt said, we've all let Horton out. If someone wanted to catch him for whatever reason, they'd have plenty of chances. All you did was let him out at night. You're not at fault. No one is. But I am. And he knows it, and Mom knows it, and Johnny'll know it, and most of all, I know it. If Horton's dead, if he's been killed, I'm the one responsible. I really don't deserve to live. Not because of Horton, but if there is only so much food left, I haven't done anything to earn it. What do I do? Gather kindling? What kind of contribution is that? I hate Sundays. Everything is worse on Sundays. July 18th. Monday. I stayed out all day, searching and gathering kindling. I fell asleep in the woods this afternoon, just collapsed into sleep. The mosquitoes must have loved me. I have half a dozen bites I don't remember from this morning. I got in around 4, and Mom was waiting for me in the kitchen. Did you eat today? She asked. I didn't see you come in and eat. I skipped brunch, I said. I forgot about it. You don't forget about food, she said. You fasted yesterday, today you eat. Those are the rules. You sure do like making up rules, I said. You think I like this? Mom yelled. You think I like seeing my children go hungry?
You think I'm getting any pleasure from all this?
Of course I don't. And I should have apologized on the spot and hugged Mom and told her how much I love her and how brave she's being and how I wish I could be just like her. Instead, I ran to my room and slammed the door behind me, just like I was 12 again. It's going to be supper time soon, and I know if I don't go out, Matt's going to drag me out. Even if he doesn't use actual force, he'll drag me out with guilt. The funny thing is, I'd just as soon not eat. Turns out if you don't eat for long enough, the idea of food becomes nauseating. That's probably how Megan's been doing it. Only she thinks going hungry is good, and I know it sucks. Supper time's going to be so much fun. July 19th. No Horton. No word from Johnny. Mom and I didn't talk. Matt isn't talking much either. July 20th. Today's the anniversary of the day men first walked on the moon. I learned that when I was doing all those papers about the moon. I hate the moon. I hate tides and earthquakes and volcanoes. I hate a world where things that have absolutely nothing to do with me can destroy my life and the lives of people I love. I wish the astronauts had just blown up the damn moon when they had the chance. July 21st. I have now gathered almost enough kindling to build a house, but Matt keeps telling me there's no such thing as enough and I should bring in more. It's not like I have anything else to do, so I keep going out and gathering. In a week I'll be going to Springfield. I just know everything will be better there, and that when I get home, this whole nightmare will be over. I was out doing my gathering thing when Mom found me. "Sammy's here," she said. "Go on in." This is the most Mom said to me in days. I figured a visit from Sammy must have really cheered her up. Maybe she brought us a can of spinach. Sammy actually looked pretty good. She's always been obsessive about her weight, but she didn't look like she'd lost very much since I saw her in June. We went out onto the porch and stared out at nothing. "I've come to say goodbye," she said. "I'm leaving tomorrow morning." "Where are you going?" I asked, remembering the laundry on the clothesline. Sammy has a kid brother a year younger than Johnny, but she hates him. She fights with her parents all the time, too. I was just as glad I wasn't going to be in that car. "I met a guy," Sammy said, and I burst out laughing for the first time in a week. I don't know why that struck me as funny, except it was so obvious, and I hadn't even thought of it. "Miranda," Sammy said. "Sorry," I said, swallowing a few more giggles. "You met a guy." "I'm going with him," she said. "He's heard things are better down south. Lots of people are saying that. We're going to Nashville, and if that doesn't work out, we'll try Dallas." "Do your parents know?" I asked. Sammy nodded. "They say it's fine. He's been giving us food, so they think he's great. And he is. He's 40, and he knows lots of people. He's been bringing us food for a couple of weeks now, and he even got gas for Dad's car and lots of bottled water. Mom and Dad would love it if he stayed, but he's been planning on moving out for a while now. He says he's been waiting until I was ready." "How long have you known him?" I asked. "You never mentioned him at school." "I met him about 4 weeks ago," she said. "Love at first sight. At least for him, which is a good thing. He can have any girl he wants. I'm lucky he wants me." "You don't sound all that happy," I said. "Well, I'm not," Sammy said. "Don't be an idiot, Miranda. I may like older guys, but not that much older. 21, 22, 23 was my absolute limit, and that was after this whole moon thing and I was drunk. But he's given my folks cartons of canned goods and gas, and Mom says maybe things really are better in Nashville and I'll have a chance. She says the best thing a parent can do for a child now is to send them someplace where they have a chance. Only you need protection, which he'll provide me." "Does he have a name?" I asked. "George," Sammy muttered, and we both burst out laughing. "Okay, I never thought I'd end up with a 40-year-old named George," she said. "And maybe we won't stick together. Maybe when we're in Nashville, I'll find myself a nice 22-year-old who can feed me, and then I'll dump George. Or maybe he'll dump me. Enough guys have. Either way, I'll be out of here, which is all I ever wanted." "I tried to visit you," I said, "a couple of weeks ago. No one was home." "I've been thinking about visiting you, but George takes up a lot of time," Sammy said. "I stopped in on Megan on my way here. She seems pissed that she's still alive." "I hope you come back," I said. "I hope we get to see each other again."
You were the only good thing about this place once Becky died, Sammy said. You know, when she died, I figured out that life is short and you have to make the best of what time you have. Of course, I didn't expect it to be quite this short, and I didn't think the best would be a 40-year-old guy named George, but that's how it goes. Anyway, I'm really going to miss you, and I wanted to say goodbye. She got up and we hugged. She never once asked how I was doing or how Mom and Matt and Johnny were. She came, she told me her news, and she left. I know I'll never see her again. I hate her for leaving, and I feel sorry for her for leaving the way she is, and for a change the ache in my stomach isn't from hunger. Or at least not from hunger alone. July 22nd. The best day in ages. It started with finding Horton at the kitchen door. He was scratching and yowling and demanding to be let in immediately. We all heard him. It was just after sunrise, or what passes for sunrise these days, and we raced out of our bedrooms and ran downstairs. Matt got there first, but I was right behind him, and Mom was less than a foot away. Matt opened the door and Horton strolled in like the past week hadn't happened. He rubbed his head against our ankles and then walked over to his food bowl. Fortunately, there was still some dry food in it, which he ate in two gulps. Mom opened up a can of food for him and poured him some fresh water. We all watched as he ate. Then, just because he's a cat, and cats love to drive people crazy, he used the litter. "He couldn't do that outside?" Mom asked, but she was laughing when she said it. We were all laughing. I think Horton was laughing right along with us. He curled up on Johnny's bed and slept for the next 6 hours. When I came back in from my kindling hunt, he was still asleep on the bed. I petted him and scratched his ears and told him how much we loved him. I guess he agreed because I could hear him purring. Then, Mom went to the post office to pick up our mail, and there were 5 letters from Johnny waiting for her. The last one was dated Monday. "He's fine, camp is fine, he's eating okay, playing baseball is fun, etc." I don't think any of the letters was more than a paragraph long, and they all said pretty much the same thing, but it didn't matter. We heard from Johnny. Mom could stop worrying. We celebrated at supper tonight. Mom declared this National Good News Day. She brought Mrs. Nesbitt over, and we feasted. Mom warmed up a can of chicken and served it with noodles and mixed vegetables. We even had dessert. Canned peaches. Mrs. Nesbitt donated a jar of apple juice. It's been getting chillier and chillier, and after supper we went into the sunroom and built a fire in the wood stove. Not a big roaring fire, but enough to take the chill off. Mom lit a couple of candles, and we had the oil lamp going and the wood stove cast off a glow. We spent the evening sipping our apple juice. I think Mom was pretending it was wine, and telling stories. Mrs. Nesbitt told us about what things were like during the Depression and World War II, and what was different now and what was the same. Mr. Nesbitt was on a submarine during the war, and she told us things he had told her about what life was like there. Horton sat on all our laps. He hopped from one lap to another until he finally settled on Matt's. I guess Matt is as close to Johnny as Horton could find. "I feel so much better about things. After a day like today, I feel like we will make it through. That if we love each other and work hard enough, we'll survive whatever might happen next." July 25th. I dreamed that Becky was working in a candy store. I saw her, and she told me to come in and take as much candy as I wanted. There were counters filled with different kinds of chocolates, and after the most wonderful, agonizing indecision, I asked for a piece of Rocky Road fudge. I even ate a bite or two before I woke up, and I swear my mouth tasted of chocolate until I realized it was a dream. I couldn't hear anyone moving around, so I stayed in bed and fantasized about chocolate. I thought about chocolate cake and Oreo cookies and chocolate chip ice cream and hot fudge sundaes and hot chocolate. Hershey bars and Nestle Crunch and peppermint patties. German chocolate cake, which I don't even like. Black forest cake. Reese's peanut butter cups. Chocolate milk. Chocolate shakes. Soft vanilla ice cream cones, chocolate dipped. Now the closest I get to chocolate is in my dreams. July 27th. "Could we have a moment?" Mom asked me, which I figured meant something was happening that I wouldn't like. Mom and I have been getting along great all week, and I didn't see how I could have done anything too awful without knowing it. So I guessed it was just more end-of-the-world stuff.
We went into the sunroom, which probably should be renamed the gray room.
There's been a change in plans, Mom said. I got a letter from your father, and it affects you.
Is he okay? I asked. Is it Grandma?
Your father is fine, Mom said. And Lisa is well. He doesn't know how Grandma is. He hasn't heard from her in a while.
Miranda, I know you've been looking forward to your month in Springfield, but that's not going to happen this year.
Why not? I asked, trying to sound mature and civilized about it.
What I wanted to do was scream and pout and throw a temper tantrum.
Mom sighed. You know how things are, she said. Anyway, Lisa is desperate to see her parents, to be with them when the baby is born. And your father is equally worried about Grandma. So they're planning to close the place in Springfield, pick up Johnny at camp, and visit for a couple of days before they take off. You'll get to see your father, but you won't have an extended visit.
Sweetie, I'm really sorry.
I know she is. I know she loves me, and she's worked really hard to make sure Matt and Johnny and I all see Dad and talk to him and feel like he's still our father. But I also know that if Johnny and I were in Springfield for August, that would stretch our food supplies out a lot longer, like 60 suppers worth, not to mention breakfasts and lunches. Sometimes I wonder if when Mom looks at me sees me, or she sees a can of carrots. I know I've been crazy thinking about Springfield as some kind of pre-moon heaven. Conditions there must be about the same as they are here. Dad has some sense of how things are going here, and if there was plenty of everything in Springfield, at the very least he'd tell Matt and Johnny and me to move in with him. Lisa might not like it, but I bet he'd tell Mom to come also. I understand how scared Lisa must be, being pregnant with the world and the condition it's in. I'd want to be near Mom if I were pregnant. Of course, if I were pregnant, Mom would kill me.
Speaking of not being pregnant,
I haven't seen Dan in weeks, not since I stopped going to Miller's Pond. I know it's impossible to call since the phones aren't working anymore, and it's tricky to drop in for a visit, but he does know where I live, and I don't see why he's ignoring me. Even Peter shows up occasionally, if only to tell us a dozen new ways people are dying. I wonder how far Sammy's gotten, and how Dad and Lisa plan to get gas along the way. Maybe things really are better down south or west. Maybe we should be leaving, too.
I don't see what good staying here is doing.
Matt came in this evening from his day of tree chopping, and he showed off his biceps. It was sad, really. His biceps were impressive, but he's gotten so thin. It looked like all his muscle tone was in his upper arms. He said that actually his legs got a good workout with all the chopping as well, and except for being hungry, he's never felt stronger in his life. I'm glad one of us is feeling strong, because it sure isn't me. Maybe Dad'll bring us food from Springfield.
Maybe there really is a Santa Claus.
July 29th. Johnny, Dad, and Lisa are due sometime tomorrow. Mom says she wrote to Johnny's camp to let them know Dad would be picking him up. She can only hope the camp got the letter. Life was easier when you could count on the telephone working. At supper tonight, Mom said she didn't know how long Dad and Lisa would be staying here, but she thought a week, maybe less. I don't want him driving all the way to Las Vegas worrying about us, she declared. So, for as long as he and Lisa are here, we're going to be eating three meals a day.
Mom, Matt said, is that realistic?
We'll manage, Mom said. We've managed so far.
Half of me? Okay, more like three quarters, loves the idea of three meals a day. Even with what passes for meals around here, that's pretty exciting. I'm used to being hungry now, and it really isn't that bad. But still, not being hungry sounds fabulous.
But there's that mean little part of me that's wondering if Mom's changing the rules because she doesn't know what to do about Johnny. We, except for Mom, were on three meals a day, at least officially when he left. Sometimes at night when I have trouble falling asleep, I think about the future, which only makes it harder for me to fall asleep, but I do it anyway, like probing a cavity with your tongue. Not the immediate future, which is bad enough, but the 6 months from now future, or the year from now future, if we're still alive. Mom must be trying to work out the future as well. Maybe she thinks we'd be better off if Matt moved on, like lots of people are doing, or if I found some guy to protect me, the way Sammy did. Then, whatever food she has would be for Johnny until he's old enough to take care of himself.
But I know Mom loves Matt and me too much to sacrifice us. And Johnny needs food now to keep growing and stay strong. Which is a real problem for Mom. One that I think she's decided not to deal with until after Dad and Lisa are gone. July 30th. Johnny and Dad and Lisa are here. They got here this evening, and it's been wonderful. Johnny looks good. He says they fed them pretty well, even though the farm was hard work and cut into baseball time. Dad's lost a few pounds, but he's always been thin, and it's not like he looks gaunt. Just thinner. Definitely older, though, than when I saw him in April. His hair is a lot grayer, and his face is way more lined. Lisa looks okay. You can tell she's pregnant, but she isn't big yet. I don't know if she should be looking more pregnant than she is, but her face is still round and her skin tone is great. My guess is Dad's seeing to it that she's eating properly, even if that means he's eating less than normal. I could see Dad checking all of us out, just like we were checking out him and Lisa. I wish I weighed more. Never thought I'd say that. Because I could see he was worried. And he has enough to worry about. I guess he had seen that Johnny looked pretty much the same, and hoped Mom and Matt and I would too. Not that Dad said anything except how great we all looked, and how wonderful it was to see us, and how much fun they'd had driving Johnny home and hearing all about baseball camp. But even though it was wonderful seeing that Dad really is okay, because you have to worry when you don't see someone for a long time, the best part was all the stuff he brought us. He and Lisa came in a minivan, and it was loaded top to bottom. Dad had labeled all the boxes, and he left at least half of them in the van, which we hid in the garage. You don't leave stuff out anymore. Even so, it took us 10 or 15 minutes to unload the boxes just for us. It really was like Christmas. Dad brought us cases of canned food, chicken noodle soup, and vegetables, and fruit, and tuna fish. I actually lost count of how many cases, but I'd guess at least 30, with each case holding 2 dozen cans. Boxes of pasta and powdered milk and mashed potatoes, jars of meat sauce and applesauce, cases of bottled water, and a half dozen jugs of distilled water. "Where did it all come from?" Matt asked. Mom was crying too hard to talk. "The college," Dad said. "It's not opening in the fall, and the dorm kitchens had all this food. Lots of the staff had already gone, so those of us who were still there divvied up what was there. I'm taking a lot with us, for the road, and for Lisa's parents and Mom, just in case they need it." But that wasn't all, although it certainly could have been. They gave us 4 blankets, and batteries, and a box of matches, and sheets, and towels, and washcloths, and toothpaste. Perfumed soap for me. Kerosene. Insect repellent and sunscreen. We all laughed at that. Tracksuits for all of us, which of course were baggy, but still wearable. And 2 working power saws, and a 2-handled saw. I figured while I was here I'd help with the firewood, Dad said. Oh, and a battery-run lamp, which we agreed made the sunroom look bright and cheerful. Mom calmed down enough to go into her room and pull out the boxes of stuff we'd bought for Lisa's baby. All those cheap clothes she'd been so excited to find. So help me, Lisa burst into tears when she saw what Mom had gotten. She kept hugging Mom and me, thanking us for thinking of her and the baby. Dad started crying too. And the only things that kept me from crying right along with them was my thinking how totally weird this all was, and Johnny rolling his eyes, and Matt looking so embarrassed, which made me want to laugh instead of cry. Lisa unfolded every single piece of clothing, and we oohed and aahed like it was a baby shower. Well, Matt and Johnny skipped the oohing and aahing and unpacked some of the food instead. I have to admit, the little overalls really were cute. We stayed up until past 10. And then Mom, who's sleeping in the sunroom so Dad and Lisa can have her bedroom, shoot us out. I'm staying up late because I feel rich with batteries. It's fun to be extravagant. I know it won't last, that even those mountains of food Dad brought us aren't going to last forever. But for tonight, I can make believe. July 31st. Dad says however much wood we think we're going to need, we're actually going to need a whole lot more, and the most important thing he can do while he's here is chop. He also said we can't store the wood outside, even right by the side of the house. It'll be gone by October, he said. Nothing's going to be safe. Mom thought about it and decided the best place to store the firewood was the dining room, since we never eat in there anymore. Not that we ate there all that often before. So after breakfast this morning, which we all ate,
We moved the furniture out of the dining room and into the living room. All the breakables had to be moved first, and it was tricky because we couldn't wrap things up in newspaper like we would have if there still were newspapers. But we didn't break anything. Then came the furniture, the break front, and the sideboard, and the table and chairs. Even Lisa carried chairs out, although Dad watched over her like she was one of the breakables. The living room looks like a used furniture store, Johnny said. Like an antiques shop, Mom corrected him. Either way, the living room is pretty much unusable now, but we haven't been spending much time in there anyway. Once the furniture was moved, Dad and Matt went out to cut down trees. Johnny and I carried the logs we already had into the dining room. Mom covered the dining room floor with sheets so it wouldn't get permanently scarred. After we finished bringing the firewood in, Johnny went out to help Dad and Matt. I went into the woods and collected more kindling. I think I crossed onto Mrs. Nesbitt's property, but I know she won't mind if I take some of her kindling. She really ought to move in with us. I don't know how she's going to make it through the winter otherwise. I'm so used to skipping brunch that I did without thinking about it, which is pretty funny. The first time in ages when we don't have to worry about food, and I skipped a meal anyway. Supper was a disappointment. Just tuna fish and canned string beans. Somehow I'd imagined a feast. Mom and Lisa actually giggled when they saw my reaction. We're going to have a real dinner party on Tuesday, Mom said. Just hold on. A real dinner party. I wish we'd save the dining room until then. But even if the food wasn't so exciting, supper tonight was actually fun. It was great having Johnny back, and it was his first chance to tell us about what camp had been like. A lot of the kids hadn't shown, which meant more food for the ones who were there, but fewer guys to play ball with. And the farm work was hard, especially in the beginning. But after the sky had been gray for a while, the animals began feeling the difference, and the chickens didn't lay as many eggs and milk production went down. Only we didn't want to talk about that, so we switched topics real fast. Dad told jokes, and it was so funny watching Mom and Lisa's eyes roll. But I think the best thing that happened today was that Horton finally forgave Johnny for leaving him. Horton's been ignoring Johnny since he got home. He's been sitting on Matt's lap, on my lap, on Mom's lap, once even on Dad's lap. And since Lisa doesn't want to have a thing to do with him, Horton's been flinging himself at her. We've all been laughing about it, except maybe Lisa. And maybe Johnny. And maybe me, since I keep remembering how hysterical I was at the thought of having to tell Johnny his precious Horton was gone forever. But tonight after supper, we sat around in the sunroom with our lovely battery light shining, and Mom crocheting while Lisa watched, and Dad, Matt, Johnny, and me playing Monopoly, which was irresistible to Horton, who had to knock pieces around. Once he'd established the floor was his turf and he was allowing us to use it out of his great benevolence, he checked us all out, and then curled up right next to Johnny and demanded to get his head scratched. Which Johnny did. Horton purred like a kitten, and for a glorious moment, all felt right with the world. August 1st. It turns out Mom's definition of a dinner party is us, Dad and Lisa, Mrs. Nesbitt, and Peter. I think it's a little weird for Mom to invite Peter, but then again, it's weird having Lisa staying here, so why not? Mom asked me to bike over to Mrs. Nesbitt's to let her know, and then to Peter's office to invite him. Johnny's been chopping wood from the trees Dad and Matt have been cutting down, so I was the one most available. Mrs. Nesbitt's been huffy about Dad ever since the divorce, but when I invited her, she practically glowed with excitement. "I'm not getting out very much these days," she confided, which struck both of us as so funny we laughed until we cried. I biked into town, inhaling dank, ashy air, and went first to Peter's office, only there was a sign on his door saying he'd closed his office and could be found from now on at the hospital. It wasn't surprising that Peter's closed his office, but it was another one of those things that make me realize how different the world's become. The past couple of days have been so great, I'd been forgetting what's really going on. Even the gray, which I thought I'd never get used to, is just part of life now. Things are different when you know where your next meal is coming from. I went to the hospital, which was incredibly busy. I was stopped in the lobby and asked who I wanted to see. I said Peter, and it was personal. The hospital still has electricity, and it was weird seeing a building all lit up. It was like a fairyland, or at least like a theme park. Hospital land! It made me think of the amusement park dream I had a while ago. Of course, things were different at the hospital. The gift shop was closed, and so was the coffee shop. I guess it's a no-frills hospital, but even so, it seemed magical. The security guard, armed, I noticed, paged Peter, and finally I was told to go to the third floor, east wing. Elevators are only for the sick, the elderly, and the handicapped, the guard said. I took the hint and used the stairs. Peter looked exhausted, but otherwise okay. I told him Dad and Lisa were with us, and that Johnny had gotten home safely, and that we were having a dinner party tomorrow night and Mom wanted him to come. If Peter felt weird about it, it sure didn't show. He grinned almost as big as Mrs. Nesbitt and said he'd be delighted. I haven't left here in almost a week, he said. I'm due an evening out. It's funny. I sort of dread Peter's visits. He always brings us something, even if it's just a can of spinach. But it feels like all he knows how to talk about are illness and death. But he looked so happy at the invitation that it made me feel good to know he'd be coming tomorrow for a real meal and a nice night out, even if it was with his kind of girlfriend, her kids, her ex-husband and his pregnant wife, and, of course, Mrs. Nesbitt. As I was walking down the hallway to the staircase, I ran into Dan. I was so startled to see him, I gasped. He looked just as shocked. "What are you doing here?" I asked him before he had the chance to ask me the same thing. "My mother's here," he said. "West Nile. She's going to be okay, but it's been a rough couple of weeks." I felt awful when I thought about how angry I'd been at him. Dan took my arm. "There's something I want to tell you," he said. "Where are you going?" "Just to the stairs," I said. "I mean, back home." "I'll walk you outside," he said, and he removed his arm, which made me sad. Somehow I thought that his arm would slide down to my hand and we'd walk together like we used to. But instead we walked like two different people, each with important stuff on our minds. We went outside to the bike rack where my bike chain was double locked. "Miranda," Dan said. And then he stopped. "It's okay," I said. "Just tell me." "I'm going to be leaving soon," he said. "Next Monday, probably. I would have gone sooner, but I wanted to make sure Mom was going to be okay before I did." I thought of Sammy and Dad and Lisa, and wondered how many more people would be leaving my life. "Do you know where?" I asked. Dan shook his head. "First we thought we'd all be going," he said. "Mom and Dad and me. To California, because that's where my sister lives. Only we saw her name on one of the lists. That's how you find out. Nobody notifies you. You just see the name. Dad took it okay. He didn't go crazy or anything. But Mom was hysterical, and she kept not believing it, so I said if I could figure out a way, I would go. I wanted to tell him how sorry I was. I wanted to kiss him and hold him and comfort him. Instead, I just stood there and listened. Dad said that was a mistake, and we had to keep on living. And Mom was so beside herself it didn't really matter, he continued. You don't know what it's like. I'm glad you don't, Miranda. I'm glad this hasn't really touched you yet. I hope it never does. And then it was summer, and I couldn't really figure out what I was supposed to be doing, so I swam, and I thought about loving you, but it didn't seem fair to you or me. Because Dad decided I should leave. It was his idea, and he told me first before he told Mom, because he knew she'd get hysterical. He swapped his car for a motorcycle and he taught me how to ride it. I didn't want to go. I didn't want to leave my folks or you. But Dad insisted, and I would have gone weeks ago except Mom got sick. Dad and I both worried if I left while she was sick, she might not make it. But now she's recovering, and I need to get going while the weather is still okay. Dad says the first frost should be in a couple of weeks. In August, I said. Dan nodded. Dad says we'll be lucky if we go without a heavy frost before September. Has your family thought about leaving? My father and stepmother are, I said. They're staying with us for a few days, and then they're going west. Maybe I'll see them on the road, Dan said. Miranda, I wish things could have been different. I want you to know I liked you a lot before all this. I was getting up my nerve to invite you to the prom. I thought about how much that invitation would have meant to me. I would have said yes, I said. Maybe we'll still get to go to a prom someday. If I'm here, it's a date, he said. I'll try to write, but I don't know if letters are going to get through. Miranda, I'll never forget you. No matter what happens, I'll remember you
and Miller's Pond. That was the only good thing that's happened. We kissed. It's funny how much that kiss meant. I may never kiss